You just never know what's going to happen sometimes.
You never know.
Bathtub. He's out of the bath, finally.
Got out of the bath, toweled up, dried
He's
off.
Out of the bathtub. We almost had to put him in a closet and take him out of the closet, but...
Welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes sales sexy again. I'm Rachel Tipton, mom, realtor, and creator of The Closing Curve.
And I'm Gina Tremarco, founder and sales trainer at Pivot 10 Results and Carolina Improv. And let's hear it from the man behind the microphone, also known as the man in the bathtub.
Hi, I'm Pete Walters, and I am on a quest to build great companies and take a nice bath.
It's a long story. If you could only see him now. Sometimes we get into these compromising positions when we're trying to get shows recorded, and you know, we go to great lengths and sometimes goofy positions.
He's just in a bathtub. In Colorado.
I did screen capture this because it's so funny. Anyway, how are you guys doing? Anything new and exciting?
Fabulous. Let's see, what's new? I just got back from taking my daughter to see Pink in concert. If you haven't seen Pink on the Beautiful Trauma Tour, or any tour for that matter, it's absolutely amazing. Like, the entire production was not only just powerful and beautiful and creative, it was just all in all a good empowering for women and just people of all colors and creeds. It was amazing.
And what a great way to bond with your daughter. What a great opportunity.
It was her very first big concert. Aww. And it was just, and her friend and her friend's mother were there, and that was her first big concert too. It really was, like, there's a song that Pink does, and it's written for her daughter called Perfect. And she talks about just never, you know, feel like you're not perfect because you're perfect to me. And that was like a big, powerful moment between me and Roxy. Like, I was just singing it to her, and she was hugging me, and it was amazing.
That's adorable.
It is.
Yeah. Don't make me cry already.
Oh, my God.
We're like 30 seconds in.
Who had more fun, the moms or the daughters?
Oh, I think I had the most fun. She was so embarrassed. There's like a DJ before everything started, and he was playing 80s stuff, and I was just dancing. And it was interesting that I thought we were in Columbia, which is a college town primarily for USC. I mean, and there's a lot of other things that go on. So I assumed there'd be tons of college kids, but it was really a diverse crowd of, you know, there was a grandma sitting over to the right of us, and there was some gentlemen sitting to the left of us. It was just totally not the crowd I expected. It was just really great. Lots of kids.
That's so cool. Was it something that she wanted to do? Did she say to you, Mom, I want to see Pink? Like, how did that go down?
No, it was me and the other mom that were like, do y'all want to see Pink? And they were like, okay.
We'll take the kids.
Yeah, but they had a great time. They were just, they begged us to purchase, you know, ridiculously expensive t-shirts afterwards, which we did. But, you know, they're big fans now. And then in this morning over breakfast, they were trying to plan which is our next concert. So
Ooh, nice.
It was good. It was good.
What does a what does a concert t-shirt go for these days? Wow. This is,
yeah. It was a $50 t-shirt.
Wow.
And what was killing me is, so when I was doing the math, because I love doing the math on these kinds of big events, like, okay, there's 20,000 people. Let's say on average $500 a ticket, because some were more and some were less. So that's $10 million just in tickets. And then you're talking, I mean, there was a swarm of people before the show and after the show buying $50 t-shirts, $150 jackets, and $40 like clear plastic backpack pieces of crap. Just and Roxy was like, is that expensive? And I'm like, it could be $300 and people would still be here buying the t-shirts. It just would be. It's amazing.
Another example of people will find the money for the things that they need and they want.
Yep, totally.
Sales tip number one.
Yep. Create some inspiration for people like Pink did and the rest of her amazing cast. And people just are in droves, like clamoring to have a concert t-shirt.
It also goes to the price point of don't be afraid to ask for more, right? Because, oh, what did that t-shirt cost? It certainly didn't cost $50. What's it?
Oh, gosh.
What's the value of it? Well, the intrinsic versus extrinsic, I mean, and you know, people are so often afraid to ask for more or talk about money. And it's just, that's a great point about that. If it was $300, they would have paid.
Yep, they would have. They absolutely, and people were standing there going, oh my God, it's so expensive, and swiping their card. And outside the door, there were guys selling $10 Pink t-shirts on the street. But see, it's not the same, because if you actually buy the concert t-shirt, you know it's legit. And like somebody sees, it's like goes back to the one of the previous episodes that we recorded, Gina, we're talking about brand value. So if you're sporting, when Roxy is sporting her concert t-shirt on Monday morning at school, people know she went to the concert. And it's different than the $10 cheapy one on the street. It just is different.
Well, it's kind of like the difference between buying a real Louis Vuitton and buying one from the guy on the corner in New York.
Totally.
I talked about this to someone recently. I wanted to experience the purchase. So I went to the store. I went through that whole experience of the free glass of champagne that cost them $1 for me to spend $1,600 on a purse. It was about the experience.
Yep. And I, you know what, when we first walked into the concert and walked past the merch table and I saw the prices on the t-shirts, I was like, okay, hopefully I can figure out a way to dodge this on the way out. But at the end, like the faces on these children as they watched mesmerized with this amazing show, I mean, I was totally like, didn't care. I was like, I don't care, whatever you want. No, not the $150 jacket, but whatever else you want.
So basically, people will spend money, people will buy inspiration and memories.
Yeah.
They buy emotion, not logic.
And yeah.
Totally. And also that when she's done with that t-shirt, I think it's big enough that I could squeeze into it too.
Dual purpose. Extra features.
I told her that though. She's like, okay.
Nice. Nice.
So what's going on with you, Gina?
Oh, I'm all excited. Living out of boxes right now in the new house. All I cared about was getting my office set up, which is exactly what I did. The rest of the house is chaos, but new little office and new little podcasting area and healing through all my multiple many surgeries that I decided to do all at one time.
Yeah, I think you should tell a little bit of that story because it's so it's I mean, you and I both have stories about moving in the middle of surgical procedures, and which is nuts, but it's unbelievable what happened to you recently.
Yeah, it's great to plan for that appendectomy.
The appendectomy was not planned. It just goes to show you, just when you think it's so funny. Okay, so you know, today this episode, as we're rambling, which I love it when we ramble, this episode that we had planned on is called Getting Back to Business, because we knew I would just be coming out of my wrist surgery. We did not know I would be coming out of wrist surgery and appendectomy. We went big. So because that all happened the prior week, I'm actually in a much better condition. Because I remember when we talked about scheduling this, I'm like, okay, guys, I can't promise I'm going to be able to do it. It's only going to be a couple days after surgery. Little did I know that they whammed all those surgeries at one time. It was a 2-for-1 special. And that was my running joke. Because I was in complete disbelief that I had this appendix situation. I just thought I had a stomach ache, and it just, for some reason, I thought I should go to the emergency room. Go figure. And then I was joking about a 2-for-1 deal. And then the irony is that the morning after that surgery, I was supposed to see my orthopedic for my wrist, for the scheduled surgery. And so I was supposed to have a pre-op, and I had to call and say, I can't make it. I'm in the hospital. Can he do a house call? And they sent the doctor to the hospital to see me. And the doctor, who's a super cool guy, he's like, hey, you're here. Let's just do this now while you're here. And I'm like, is that normal? Is that okay to do two surgeries back to back? He's like, I'll check with your other surgeon. How many people have multiple surgeons? I'll check with your other surgeon and get back to you. And then he said, yeah, we're good to go. He's like, you're already here. You're already checked in. I said, you know, I was joking with them last night while they were removing the appendix. Could they remove this hardware from my hand? He's like, if they would have called me, I would have come.
That's too bad that they didn't, because it probably would have really gone better if they had done everything while you were under the first time.
Yeah, I will say that back-to-back anesthesia, not a good idea. Mm. That's all. I'm going to leave it right there. Just not a good idea to do back-to-back anesthesia. Now, the good news is I knocked it all out and a move all in the same week, and I did not have to move because I couldn't move. And so I went and stayed with a friend for a few days because I had nowhere to stay, in technically, because the move was happening the day after I got out of the hospital. Yeah, or the day of. No, the day of. Something like that. It was all wacky. Anyway.
The fact of the matter is that it all happened. And it actually is, what's crazy, Gina, is it's like all almost a year after a similar situation happened to me, that I was moving and I had planned to move and I had a big surgery happening, and the surgery was supposed to happen on May 9th and my move was April 27th. And then all of a sudden, I forget why, they moved the surgery up. So my surgery was on April 20th and my move was on April 27th. So it was the same deal that, you know, you and I both faced of like, okay, this has just got to happen and just make it happen. And it's uncomfortable of like just making the impossible happen, but you just kind of have to do it. Like, you're on a deadline, I have to move. And then it becomes really a case of letting go and letting other people help you, right? I know you found that this week, and you just have to let people help you.
Well, I will say you were super helpful when it came to, because it was a pretty stressful, like, is this shit really happening? Like, all at the same time. And you're like, you just got to roll with it. It's happening. It's not stopping. You got to go with it. I think I finally got to a point of true surrender. I mean, I think I was a true surrender at the appendectomy, because I was in complete disbelief when they're like, we got to roll you back right now. And I'm like, this isn't happening to me.
I can't believe it. I was at a movie with my daughter, and I had talked to you that Gina. Okay, just FYI, y'all, don't ever ask me for medical advice, because Gina was telling me in the morning, Rachel, since you know about, you know, abdominal pain, like, what do you think? And I'm like, you're just stressed out. Go have a hot bath. You'll be fine. Then I went to a movie with my daughter and get out of the movie, and she's like in the hospital, and I was like, whoops.
She's like, just take a hot bath.
You'll be just fine. Warm, stop
warm
complaining.
Water. Bats, you'll be fine.
Bats cure everything.
Mm-hmm.
Not about to burst appendices. Yeah.
So
how long did it take you to get back to work, Gina, after your, is this the first day?
No, this is day five. So it took me, I mean, I was knocked out that whole week, really, because I had surgery on I had the emergency surgery on a Sunday, and then I had the wrist surgery on a Tuesday, and I stayed with a friend until a Saturday before I went back to our new house, or went to our new house for the first time. And yeah, I was down for a full week, down and out. And then the kind of getting back into the groove this week is, you know, I'm not at 100% for
so
sure.
Was getting back to work something you were looking forward to, or was that, oh, damn, I got to get to this?
Oh, I couldn't wait to get back to work. I mean, I love what I do. I love working. Like, not being able to work is probably the most stressful thing in the world. Anybody will tell you that about me. I've had several people, I think Rachel actually at the beginning of the day asked me, are you overdoing it? Yeah, I'm always overdoing it. I have to be super careful because A, I can't lift more than 10 pounds for 6 weeks. And B, I only have one hand.
So there's, and still accomplishing more than the average bear.
Probably. But the, you know, before all this happened, the reason why, you know, we talked about doing this episode was getting back to business. And Keith and I have talked about this separately, and Rachel and I have talked about this separately in general, that there's all kinds of scenarios that prevent people from, you know, being their most productive, or they're taken out of the workforce, or they're taken off of their jobs for a while because of things that are happening. And it could be a variety of scenarios. So they're different. Like, I talk about when people go on vacation, and when I've coached, when I've done executive coaching, you know, I would always work with clients on, like, okay, you're going on vacation. What's your reentry plan before? Like, let's get your reentry plan in place so that when you come back from vacation that you're able to jump right back in. So you've got, you know, there's a variety of scenarios, vacations, or people who've been out of the job, out of a job for a while, and they're on a hiatus, or a personal health scare like I've had, like Rachel's had, ailing parents, which I've had, when you get pulled away to take care of that, or a maternity or paternity leave. There's a variety of things that'll take you out of the work world for a while. And in today's world, I don't know if I've come up with this phrase or I heard it, but I'm using it, work-life blend versus work-life balance. So when we're not really, it's really hard to balance, you know, work and life. And so many people blend it basically, but there are moments where not even the blend can happen. Like when I'm sitting in a hospital, I can't blend anything because I'll tell you, there was a day I was so sick that, believe it or not, Paige Dawson, who we all know, said, "We thought you died because we didn't see a single post on Facebook." You know I'm sick.
Or under sedation, full sedation.
I had to turn off my phone. I wouldn't take calls from anybody. I think I even sent you to voicemail, Rachel. Like, calls were, no, you know what? Rachel, your call was the only call I took.
Yeah, because I was like, are you on drugs right now? Because you're like, literally, you had just come out of, you know, you were like barely awake. So I appreciate you taking my call. But I was like, I think you should go rest now.
Your call was the only call I took. And then I like turned the phone off like that. You know, that was pretty bad. So I couldn't do any work-life blending at that point. So here's the question, and I think a lot of people have experienced this, especially women. How do we get our mojo back beyond some of the tips that we talked about in Delegate or Die several episodes back when I initially broke my hand and we talked about delegation and how do you get through it? But how do you get your mojo back when you get totally knocked down by so many things that may be happening simultaneously, especially as we get older? So I kind of wanted to dive into that topic because I know that a lot of people deal with that. Your thoughts?
Well, I can definitely speak on it. And I think one really good way, and I'm just going to relate back to my similar situation with the surgery, is my policy at that time was fake it till you make it. And I can recall my surgery, unlike your appendectomy, mine was a planned surgery. So I knew I was driving to the hospital, or Felix was driving me to the hospital, and I was on the phone with a client who, it was like a brand new real estate client. He was looking at all this property, and I was talking to him and doing that kind of intro thing with a new client. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to be 100% transparent that I'm going into a surgery, and I probably won't speak to you for like 48 hours. It's probably not a good idea to speak to you for 48 hours. And which, I had family around me to force me to turn my phone off, which was good. But I did the surgery, but I almost immediately took calls again as soon as I was back, you know, lucid. And I just was faking it, like, for clients that didn't know me well enough to know that I had just had a surgery. I was just faking it. And then I recovered for several weeks and convalesced at my parents' house. And I had interviews that I had to do with people live face to face or, you know, via Zoom interviews with people all over the planet that I had to do for a project. And they had no idea that I had just had this surgery. And by the time I felt fine to do it, I just did it. I was faking it till I made it. Like, I was fine, but I was just faking that I was fine and getting back to work. And I was just forced into it. So I think if you just, and I could have very well just been like, I don't feel good. I need to rest or whatever. But I just said, this is taking my mind off of me not feeling good. So I just sort of faked that I felt good until I did.
Keith, I know you've been through stuff. I'm not gonna share your stuff, but I'd love your perspective. And you've also have run organizations where I'm sure that this has come up, where you've dealt with situations with employees that something's happened and you can see a difference in their productivity or their performance. What's some advice you could give around that?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that you and I were talking about earlier on was supporting parents, and I had to take time off to support parents. And that was an interesting exercise in prioritization, both for then and then. How do you manage it until you get back? I'm kind of the same way. I like to get back as quickly as I can because it kind of takes my mind off of all the other issues that are going on. But from my employees' perspective, we've always taken the stance of go take care of your personal life. Get your personal life in order. Of course, it can't take overly long, but get that in order. And so you can focus all of your attention while you're here.
Awesome advice.
Well, and another thing,
we laugh because just so everyone knows why we laugh so much or we have these pauses is because we can see each other on video and we see the different faces that we each make. And we're still trying to be very professional in our speaking.
Right.
While other things are going on.
Yes. Yes.
Well, there's also, you know, for women especially, and we talk about this and I talk about it a lot because I've got a child. The women that take time off to have a child, and there's that transition back for women that make the choice to re-enter the workplace after they have a child. That's a transition too. It's a tough one. If you take, I know some women take 4 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever the job, your job will allow, or you allow yourself to take for maternity leave. When you come back, it's just a baby changes everything, especially if it's the first. And it's a really tough transition. So the fake till you make it practice definitely helps. But I'm sure, I know when I had to go back to work after I had Roxy, I was just distracted. It was very hard for me to focus on what was in front of me because of the big major change in my life that happened. But you just got to just think about, focus on what's in front of you and compartmentalize that until you can, you know, get back to your child if that's the case, going away and then coming back. And probably the same if you're dealing with a parent, like you were just mentioning, Keith, that you're dealing with that personal issue at home and then going to work and then going back to it. And you really I'm sure if it's an ailing parent or a situation that's challenging, it's hard not to be distracted by it. And you just have to separate yourself and compartmentalize those emotions so you can be fully present for your work tasks.
I think some of the challenges that I experienced with, like, when my mom was sick and I had to go back and forth to Chicago and take care of those scenarios. I think even some people on my team wouldn't bring things to me or wouldn't share things with me because they were concerned that I wasn't fully in the game. And I didn't hear about it till after the fact. And so I wasn't even aware that, I don't want to say that they lost confidence in me, but I wasn't even, if I were to do it all over again, it's like, how do you continue to keep your mojo going and convince people that you're, you know, you're still able to do what you're doing, and people create other stories in their minds of whether or not you're capable. And so one question I ask, or rhetorically ask of both of you, is, you know, how do we be really transparent with people? I mean, I have a tendency to be extremely transparent and extremely open, and we joke about how much I'm on Facebook. I'm an open book. People know what, you know, that I've been in and out of the hospital for different reasons, or that my mom's been sick, or I'm moving. I'd rather be open and honest, but I have to still make sure that I show up to do what I say I'm going to do, that I'm still going to do the job, that I'm still going to make things happen. And I know that there's a little bit of leeway. People are going to give me a little bit of freedom, knowing that I'm not going to bounce back right away. Like, I know, even like, I think I text both of you yesterday about our upcoming episode. It's like, it's day four back in the saddle. Feels like day one. I mean, I'm definitely drowning, but I'm still going to, you know, I think I probably am harder on myself than anybody else is.
Well, yeah, because you think that you need, and that's why I've been reminding you to don't overdo it, because coming back from anytime you have an abdominal surgery, you've got to take it slow. And take it from me, because I didn't. I did, but I didn't. I wish I'd take it slower, but you think that you need to be back full force, because people are going to judge you for not, you know, for taking time, but you've got to as well. You've got to be gentle with yourself and understand that sometimes stillness is a gift that you're given, so you can gain a different perspective.
I think that being transparent is a good idea as well. I mean, that there, in a great organization, there's trust, and that trust is tied with transparency. And also part of that, though, is expectations. You know, for example, Gina, what you're talking about, people not bringing things to you. And, you know, one of the things might be, did you explicitly, you know, say, and I expect you to still bring things to me? Because otherwise people are going to, they're going to change how they interact with you out of compassion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. And then you kind of, you know, I probably internalize some of it, of like, why wouldn't they come to me? Why wouldn't they come tell me about it? And took it very personally.
Yeah. And especially like in your current situation, people know, because you've been transparent, we know, like, you should be taking a little time to rest. So maybe we shouldn't, something that could possibly wait, like perhaps the perspective of at that time with the improv folks not telling you all of the things that were going on, perhaps they were making a judgment call that this was not an urgent issue, that it could possibly wait and be handled later when you didn't have so much on your plate. It's just, you know, people, like Keith said, making a judgment call due to compassion and going, maybe she just, you know, maybe we'll figure out a solution to this on our own.
Oh, and those are beautiful moments. I love when people make, you know, come up with solutions on their own. And it's so funny, because when I'm actually not sick, it's like the little problems that they bring to me where I'm like, really? That was a no-brainer. But I don't verbally say it, but they see it in my face for sure. My face speaks a lot. Oh, I hear Audrey. Hi, Audrey.
I have the door closed too, and she's still.
Oh, she wants to come in. You know what? It's like, it's almost time to eat. I think that's it, because Lola's at my feet making noises, and I'm trying to keep her quiet. I wonder if Keith has any animals at his feet.
Figuratively or literally?
Not currently. No, I don't. All distractions.
So I came across. Oh, see, there we go. She's talking. Now Lola wants to eat. Okay, she must have heard Audrey. I came across this article, Getting Back to Work After Taking a Leave of Absence. And there's a couple interesting, and I'll put the link to this for our show notes, of just tips that, you know, anyone who's taken a leave of absence, some tips like setting up a meeting with your supervisor,
consider asking for a transition period or flex scheduling. Make your first day gracious. Show that you've still got it. And I think that's the thing that resonated with me in anything that you're doing. Showing that you still got it and not doubting yourself, because people can smell the doubt on you. So even in, you know, in sales, getting back on the phone, we talked about this the other day in one of our quickie tips, you know, because I'm not 100% and I get tired and then I got to take a little break. I had the most productive calls between 7 and 9 p.m. for sales conversations, because what how it turned out was that that was a better time for those people that I was talking to, because life happens and they had their own life situations going on and they're trying to get through the day operationally in their businesses or their jobs, and they really don't have time to have a conversation. But after they put the kids down to sleep, they have time for conversation. And I found that to be a really productive way for me to kind of get my mojo back. And I was all pumped up after that. I felt good about it.
A beautiful constraint, to quote that book that you gave us a while back. Well, and definitely you'll get different perspective too. Like if you have been away for a while, you get that different perspective out of necessity. Like you just did that, you know, 7 to 9 is not your typical sales call time frame for most salespeople, but you found through the constraint and the perspective you were forced to have that it really works.
Mm-hmm. Well, from a sales perspective, you know, self-doubt can just kill your effectiveness. Yeah. So one thing to think about is if you are coming back from a leave is how can you get right into role plays or other exercises just to get that confidence built up? You've got to get, you know, if you're going to be making sales, you need that level of confidence. Otherwise, and you know, what happens when you don't have the level of confidence and you're trying to make sales and then things don't go well and then your confidence goes the other direction. So how can you build that confidence up before you step back into the game through exercises, through your coworkers, you know, whatever.
I think from a sales perspective, just getting on the phone in general and talking to people, which is what I've been doing, is just I've been a little bit out of commission. So I needed to just get back on the phone and start talking. And the more I did that, the more my confidence came back, the more my self-doubt went away, the more I was like, dang, I am good at what I do. And the more I did that, right, it's kind of like they say the best time to make a sales call is when right after you've closed a sale, right? Because you're on a high, you feel good, and so that role playing or just getting back on the wagon, in the saddle.
I think that lack of confidence that we were talking about, when you come back, it leads to inaction, and the most important thing is to take positive action. As Keith said, if you don't have anyone to call, role play, it's great, great. In real estate, role play is so great in any sales situation. And like Gina said, just get on the phone and call somebody. Call a friend who you've done business with before and speak to them and just get your wheels in motion in a positive direction.
I think talking to people is a great idea, because in a lot of these situations, we're isolated. You know, when we're away from other people, or maybe we're with our parent who is sick, but you know, we're isolated. And so just as Gina said, talking to other people gets that whole interaction juice flowing.
What about the continuing to balance a continuation of personal distractions, right? Like sometimes people have a sick parent that their parents are sick for a while, and it's a kind of this ongoing thing that creates this stress. What is the best way for them to continue to go through that? Or when I was doing a lot of coaching, I had a lot of clients that were menopausal that I had no experience with. Like, I didn't understand it. I couldn't understand what they were talking about, where they're like, no, you don't understand. In the middle of the day, I'm just exhausted and I have to take a nap. And I'm like, what in the world are you talking about? And then I got older.
And then you found out. Seems to me like if you're in either A, the menopausal situation like you mentioned, or B, a situation of taking care of an ailing parent, the as Keith said, you get isolated in those situations, I'm assuming, because I haven't been in either one of those yet. But you get, when you get isolated, you feel like no one understands and no one can get it. And you're all alone and as if no one has experienced this ever. And the best way to deal with that seems like to find a group of people. Yeah. If you're going through menopause, find a group of other menopausal women or postmenopausal women that you can talk to so they can go, oh yeah, that happens all the time. And this is how I dealt with it. And this is how you could deal with it. So then you have some tools to add to your toolbox to deal with it. And the same, I'm assuming, with dealing with an ailing parent, that there's other folks that have been through this. This is how they dealt with it. These are their coping mechanisms. They can really understand how frustrating and helpless you might feel, or just they feel you. They understand the actual situation and you're not isolated any longer.
It goes back to what we've talked about several times, is like mentorship, right? Like find someone, an advisor or a mentor or someone who's experienced it that can be a good resource for you.
Well, and it goes back to being transparent about it. Now, I guess certain things are more appropriate about being transparent about than not, but coming from me, who wanted a conjugal visit room in the office, but I love that, you know.
That was another episode. That's another episode. We'll talk about that later. So, conjugal room at work.
So that was just a tease for other episodes. But so, you know, the parent thing, there's so many people, if you bring that into the workplace in a, hey, this is what's happening, which I did when it was going on for me, so many people reached out to help and support. And even if it was just, yeah, I went through that and here's what we did. And that was just so valuable, but hard to expose that.
Yeah. Vulnerability is, it's funny how it's so hard in this world to be really authentic and vulnerable with what's really going on. It's so much easier to post a pretty picture, a little pretty selfie on social and be like, everything's cool, I'm good, instead of being really honest. And I was just listening to David Goggins' book, Can't Hurt Me, and he's exposing these really difficult challenges in his life that he says in the audio version of the book, it's just embarrassing and it's so hard to be really vulnerable about the challenges, but yet it's made him a superstar in the eyes of the world that wants inspiration, because people see that such a strong person has vulnerabilities too. And so you just never know who else right in your closest circle has real life experience and what you're facing, and that it may bring you a closer bond together with people in, right around you, that you just didn't know existed until you took the chance and found the courage to be vulnerable, because it's a pretty courageous act to be vulnerable.
And it's also a powerful act. I mean, there is a power in vulnerability that that people don't realize.
Yeah, huge. When I wrote my book, I felt like I dumped my purse on the table in front of the world of some stuff I'd been through, and it terrified me. And I thought, oh God, and a million regrets of exposing my past, but it's had the opposite effect, of course, of people going, wow, you know, I can relate to this and this and that. It is powerful.
And in case Keith can't relate to dumping your purse on the table.
I don't think I've ever used that quote.
So sometimes we don't want to dump our purse on the table because we're fearful that we've got all these extra tampons in our purse that we don't want anyone to see.
And so, every time I use that phrase, dumping my purse, that you guys go find the episode, the clip from The Breakfast Club where she dumps her, Ally Sheedy dumps her purse on the table all of a sudden, and all this crap comes out. And it's actually the catalyst in that movie, I think, for all of the characters to start opening up about their real lives rather than the facade that they're keeping. It's like she's got a bunch of crazy shit in her bag.
Every woman does.
Sometimes you'll find stuff and be like, whoa, I've been looking for that for a long time. How'd that get in there?
Oh, that's where that is. Yeah. So I hope Keith can understand what we're talking about.
No, I can't. I think it's a great way to understand a woman. Just go ahead and dump your purse. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Yep. That'll tell you
what's
a lot.
What's the craziest, totally tangent, what's the craziest thing that, what's something you carry around in your purse, Gina, that no one would know is in there?
Oh my God, that is a really good question. I'm trying to think now because I've been cleaning my purse on a regular basis because it gets so, okay, wait. I was going to show you that nobody else could see it, but there is in my purse right now, it is a square-shaped sponge, like a cube. So if I were to dump that over, I think people would be like, what? Exactly. So it is what I got at physical therapy for my hand. I'm supposed to squeeze the sponge, but it's an odd item in my purse right now.
Nice.
And now I've used it as sort of like a tension ball when I get stressed out. I will just pull out the sponge and start squeezing it. Randomly.
Or you could dab makeup, you know, touch yep. up.
You could. That's
if someone were to ask you to dump your purse just to so they could learn more about you, would you do it?
Yes. Would I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All day long.
Yep. There's interesting stuff in my purse at all times. I carry, like, because I'm in real estate, my purse, my Dagny Dover. Now I have the second Dagny Dover purse.
I want a Dagny Dover.
Incidentally, though, so my first, and if you guys go back to our episode on branding awareness, or I forget the name of the episode, but we'll reference in the show notes, where we talk about, and I talk about the Dagny Dover and the fact that it has problem, like with its, it has erectile dysfunction. It's sort of flopping over. And so I took the first purse and I stuffed it with the paper that came in the second purse. So it's in my closet right now, all stuffed with the paper, right? The packaging paper. And it's getting its form back. It just needed a little rest. So I'm going to bring that first one back for springtime.
So it needed a little rest and it needed some filling and
it needed filler.
It needed filler. All right.
But I would dump my purse out, and I always have my laptop in there. I always have, I always have a lock for the gym to lock up my laptop at the gym. I have every kind of charger that you can imagine. I have always have lipstick, tampons, AirPods, and the other kind of earphones. Like, always have makeup, my glasses. And I always carry the weird thing, my little thing that I always carry in every purse, and I move it around from purse to purse. It's like a little silver disc, and it has an angel on it. It's a travel angel. It's supposed to protect me everywhere I go. And a friend of mine gave it to me, and it says, it's a travel angel that also says mother on the back, because a friend of mine gave it to me when I had Roxy, and she said I should always carry it with me for protection. So I always move it from purse to purse, as any woman who, you know, has a graveyard of purses knows that you move all your shit over from one purse to the next, and that's when you usually clean it out and you go, what the hell is this? Oh, you know, but that always gets moved over.
Another important lesson, Keith, for you to know that there is true struggle in moving from purse to purse, because you want to make sure that you didn't forget anything important when you transfer purses.
Yes.
Just...
That's why we never throw one away, because just in case something got down in the, you know, cracks and crevices of the purse that you forgot,
exactly.
You gotta go get it.
I was out the other day with like more of my briefcase bag, but I didn't want to carry a briefcase bag and a purse, and so I'm like, all right, so I had to move everything. And these struggles are real. And then I had to remember to empty it when I got home so that I had everything I needed.
So if you're walking into a sales situation, what does your purse say, or does it make a statement about you, and how does it affect the, you know, that interaction with whoever you're selling to?
Well, that's an interesting question, Keith, because what my purse or bag says is really subjective to the person listening to it.
So
you know what I mean?
So you don't try to convey a message with it. As part of the image.
I do. I mean, I rarely leave my home without my Louie. I mean, there's that. There's that whole status thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and we talk about that in that whole episode of the mm-hmm. status bit. And I'm the opposite when it comes to purses. Like, I don't have a thing against it. I wouldn't turn down a purse that costs four figures, but my purse is not a four-figure purse. But it's huge because I always have my laptop. So I get a lot of commentary about that thing is huge, and it also weighs like 40 pounds. But my comment is, yeah, it's because I never leave my house without my laptop because I just never know when I need to write a contract.
Nice.
My catchphrase.
So, purses bag. Like, I've got my briefcase bag. That what does that say? It says that I'm busy and I need a big bag to carry everything. Like Rachel said, like the laptop and everything that I need access to. Like if I were kicked out of my home and had nowhere to go, what would I bring with me? That one bag with my laptop and some makeup. And a wallet, and I'm
exactly.
good.
That's why my purse always has all that in there, just in case.
And, you know, living in a hurricane area, I've learned now, having to evacuate a few times, I now know it's like whatever fits in my car, that's it. I don't need anything else outside of what fits in my car.
You know, you bring up a really interesting point to go circle back to the topic that we lost long ago in this podcast. Which was coming back, re-entering after a break. And we have that around here sometimes, like lately, every
year.
That's
a good point.
That we have these little hurricanes, as we call them.
I've never heard it called that.
You haven't heard about hurrication?
Hurrication, no.
Hurrication is when you are evacuated due to a hurricane and you're forced to go on a little mini vacation. That's what that is.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you go on hurrication, a lot of time. I mean, first of all, in our area, when we have a hurricane, then nobody's working because everybody has to evacuate because it's dangerous. So you can't quite do business. The way that I did business during the last hurricane was just check on clients and call them and say, hey, how are you doing? Did you have to evacuate? It's just a good way to touch base. But you kind of have to take a little break from certain things because everybody is, you know, evacuating and worrying about safety. But it's also really, as you recall, Gina, I'm sure, when you return the transition back post-hurricane and re-entering of business, it's really awkward and clunky and slow. And you're just unsure. Are they back? Is their house okay? Like, it's a difficult transition, too.
I think I wrote a blog post about that after the last hurricane. As it was like sales tips. It was actually for salespeople, what to do when you're in a hurricane market. How do you approach clients and prospects who have just gone through that kind of catastrophe? Because you have to have some level of compassion and patience and realize that people are just getting back online. And especially in the hotel world, which I work a lot in, the hotels get, you know, they get pummeled in a resort town if it's a hurricane town, and the salespeople in hotels really struggle with, you know, recapturing the business that they lost or convincing clients that we know it's happened 3 years in a row, but it's not going to happen again next year. Please book with us again. And how do they recapture that? So having some compassion in how you approach people after a disaster can make or break your business.
For sure. Hopefully you'll include a link to that great blog in our show notes.
Thanks for that reminder. I will link to that blog. Yep.
So Keith was talking about the fact that he took care of his, you know, that he was taking care of his parents when they were ill. And we've all talked about this before. Is it kind of more of a female thing or guy thing that we get, you know, we assume the responsibilities for taking care of family? Is that, you know, I can definitely say in my family, there's three of us girls and one boy. And if my parents need help, it'd probably be one of us girls. Just that's my perspective.
What do you think, Keith?
I think it may be. I took care of my mom immediately after she had her strokes and so forth. And then my sister ended up taking care of her long term. And you know, I think part of it gets back to, I've talked before about masculine behavior and feminine behavior, yin and yang and so forth. But I think, you know, women embrace the empathy piece better, or I think it's a more of a feminine behavior. Taking care of my mom long term is something I could never do, and my sister was a saint to do it. So I think,
are you saying men are not patient?
Well, no, I don't know about that. I think some men more than others.
Yeah.
But part of it depends upon, you know, how many siblings you have and the gender of the siblings. But I think if there is multiple genders of siblings, then a lot of times it does end up on the women to take care of ailing parents.
And that ultimately impacts their lives and their careers, right? When my mom was sick, you know, my brother and I, who are slightly estranged at this time, we do that periodically. Yeah, we do that periodically. He lives in Chicago in the same building as my mom because they have a 2-unit building. And when she was sick, I was the one flying. I flew back and forth to try to help, but there was always sort of a attitude of like, well, my brother's there, and I think he felt like he was taking it all on. But I did the things for my mom that I don't want to say only a woman could do, but having the patience to sit with her and take her to the hospital and take her to all her appointments and to have show compassion, to keep her calm and to like really be on top of her emotions and be aware of them. Those were things that I don't think my brother could take on. At the same time, he also couldn't appreciate the impact it had on me having to fly back and forth. Not just the cost, financial costs, like the toll it took on me to do that and how it impacted my business. And that was a great cost to have to take that on and then to bounce back from that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the answer is. I guess the big aha to share with people is don't be so hard on yourself. Because I don't think others are going to be as hard on you as you are, and ask for help and be transparent and tell people what it is that you need, because people will rally. And I've learned this the hard way. I don't want to say the hard way, but you have a couple knockdowns and then you really learn, and I'm going to ask for help. And that's like when I went through this situation with this newest thing, I like literally put it out there. I'm like looking for help on Saturday, looking for help with this, looking for someone to help move, looking for someone to come pick me up at the hospital. Like I have learned that you have to ask for help, and that's how you're going to bounce back faster in any situation.
Totally. So good. And in the world of social media, you can just get almost instant assistance, not only asking questions of like, how should I, you know, where can I get this? How can I do that? But like you just said, hey, I need help. And in real time, people will see it and go, well, I'm free. I can help you right now, which is it. And again, it being vulnerable and asking for that help, it's hard to do, but it's really rewarding. And a lot of times it's rewarding for the other person who they might be in a time in their life where they need that feeling of helping someone else. Helping someone else takes me out of my own problems. So it's actually a gift to me when I can help you.
Oh gosh. Yeah. It's a great distraction. And to your point, people love to help. People love to be part of your solution and know that they played a small part in you getting back on your feet, which is a cool thing. So, and then you just have to remember to say thank you.
Gina, both you and Rachel somewhat control your own schedule. And so think about it from a perspective of someone who is in a situation where their schedule is less under their control. It's a stricter schedule. And that's, I think, where even more so being transparent about it, asking for help is important, because, you know, otherwise it looks like you're shirking your schedule or shirking your duties. So it's a different situation when you don't have that much control over your work schedule.
Absolutely. And that's why I wanted you to chime in earlier on from your perspective, Keith, of running organizations. I think hopefully you're working for an organization that's going to have some level of compassion, and that's part of their core values and core behaviors. But I think you have to be open and transparent and vulnerable and say what's going on and say what you need, because people don't always understand it, especially if they don't have experience with it. Not everyone has experience with an ailing parent or death, even what happens with that. Not everyone's had experience with illnesses in the family or personal illness. And the only way you can convey that is to share that, and to have, if you don't have control of your schedule, like we do as business owners, you have to be able to go to your boss or supervisor and say, this is what's going on, and what kind of accommodations can you make for me?
Yep. And be able to also deal with the situation when, I mean, I know there's people that run into the challenge of a boss or a supervisor not being accommodating. And then, you know, I'm sure it's real, and somebody out there listening probably can go, yep, that you say, well, my mother is sick. No one else can help her. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. And they're like, well, if you want to have a job, then you'll figure it out. And, you know, then you're faced with the choice, like, are you in the right situation? Is it time for a change? Because if your mother or a family member or something important to life, it takes precedence. And if you're working for a company, corporation, supervisor, boss, or any other associate that's not going to be compassionate to that, then there's your sign that you've got to reevaluate, and you might just be forced into it. And make the choice.
And that's a whole nother topic on when you choose to work for a company, right? They choose you, but you choose them. And you have to choose a company where their values and behaviors match yours. And that's a whole nother topic, because you're going to run into those situations. And I think I've even been that type of leader where I didn't have the empathy of a situation, right? Like the younger you are, for instance, like if you're not accustomed to having sick parents because you're younger, it's hard for you to, I mean, I can't be positive about this, but I think I've had moments in time where I'm like, yeah, right, your parents are sick. Come on, what does that mean? Because I didn't know any better because I hadn't experienced it.
Right.
So if you're getting that kind of pushback in your organization, I think that's when you have to find somebody else in the organization that you can talk to that might understand it. And I think we've referred back to this too. Find someone that can relate to the experience you've had. Make them your cheerleader or your advocate that can help get you through the situation.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it's time to wrap up yet another amazing episode. Any final parting thoughts from my two magnificent partners?
I like magnificent.
I just came up with it.
I think the biggest takeaway is obviously to go ahead and have the courage to be vulnerable about what you need, and just go for it. Ask for help. You know, you might be amazed at who comes to your aid and what kind of doors open for opportunity when you ask for help.
And I'm going to take it from the other side, you know, from the perspective of not the person in the situation, but from the other side of the equation, you know, especially you mentioned younger bosses and so forth. You have to realize that something's going to happen to you at some point. And, you know, what kind of accommodations would work well for you and make what's needed for your life for you. And I think it's important that people think about that before they just react and think, oh, this is inconveniencing me.
Right. Right. Awesome. Well, it's been another fun show with the two of you.
You just never know what's going to happen sometimes.
You never know.
Keith's out of the bath, finally.
I got out of the bath, toweled up, dried off.
He's out of the bathtub. We almost had to put him in a closet and take him out of the closet, but... you know, I forgot to mention, and we're going to wrap up, but you know, if you want to get our 10 tips to making sales sexy again, just go to our website and do that. And you can download that. And here's a question I have for everybody, because this is someone gave me a challenge to that. And I want to see if she really listens to our show. Her name is Lori. So she's pushed on, you know, what else are we doing in case people want more of us? And they want to, what if there are people out there who want to buy something from us? What would that be? So I'm just going to put it out there. I'm going to make the ask. If we were to sell something to help you improve your sales, and Keith, keep your mind out of the gutter. If we were to sell something, what would you want to buy from us? And I might as well ask the world, because we've been pushed as far as like, what else do you have besides your podcast? Yes, I do have Spontaneous Selling 1.0, the video series, coming out. And I'm going to say it so that it has to come out, because it's ready to go. I just need someone to put it on a platform. So there's that. But what do you want to see me and Rachel do together, or maybe the three of us do together? If you could see Keith on video.
Oh my gosh.
So that's something that I pose to our listeners. All right. You guys ready to go? It's time for us to get out of here.
We need to get out of here.
Yeah, we need to get out of here. So thanks to all of our Warners for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warns You About. To connect with me directly or learn more about Pivot 10 Results in Carolina Improv, you can visit GinaTremarco.com.
And to connect with me, Rachel Tipton, visit theclosingcurve.com or find me on social media as Rachel on Real Estate. And Keith, what if people want to connect with you?
Well, they can go to womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com and find my profile and get to my LinkedIn page.
Yay! And find all of our social media links and free downloads, including that 10 tips to making sales sexy again that Gina mentioned, on our website. Once again, it's womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
And, you know, because we record these on a Zoom platform, we actually have video. So how much is Keith going to pay us to not post the video of him in the bathtub?
It was G-rated, though.
You know what? That's something we could sell. Okay. If you want to buy a copy of the video behind this episode, just let us know. All right, we got to get going. Don't forget, we would love a review and rating from you. 5 stars is our favorite number. So if you haven't done so, it really helps us get found. Go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And one parting thought, remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.